You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's, well, they're not actually in the sky, but it's Oscar Blues Brewing Company. They are one of the biggest supporters of OneOfUs.net. They make all kinds of great beers. They were the first craft brewery to put beer in a can, and they've got breweries open in North Carolina, two in Colorado, and one in Austin. They're really amazing. They've been a huge support to OneOfUs.net, and we'd appreciate it if you would support them as well. Also, you guys, subscribers out there, you know who you are or who you aren't. Please think about becoming a subscriber if you're not already. That is the way that we're able to put out all the free content as well as all the bonus content, of which there is lots of which in our forums for you guys. Become a subscriber, support OneOfUs.net, drink Oscar Blues Brewing Company, and, you know, don't be afraid to check out our other social media on Facebook, YouTube, Tumblr, Twitter. We're all over the damn place.
I'm sorry to bother you, but I have to talk to you about a movie I just saw, and god damn, it was good. That's my review. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Good night.
Done and done.
And that was done.
Why belabor the point?
Chris wanted it to do. He wanted us to do it quickly, and we did it quickly. But I guess we should.
We hung up on the call already anyway.
Yeah, right.
I still have half a beer. Can I just hang out for a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, we're going to sell you on this beer. This is Sorry to Bother You. By God, this is a great first time debut by writer-director Boots Riley, who's better known as a rapper and political activist. But, man, he comes swinging out of the gate for his very first feature.
Who knew?
Who knew indeed? I was certainly not a guy on my radar because I don't follow his career. But, damn, I'm going to definitely see what this guy does next. This is a film about... I'm trying to work a Mac. I don't know how to work Macs. So there we go. I'm just trying to get this up here. Starring Lakeith Stanfield, who most of you might have remembered from Get Out. He's been doing a lot of great stuff lately. And he is a down-on-his-luck guy called Cassius Green with a smoking hot girlfriend, played by the always great Tessa Thompson, who is also doing great these past few years. He finally gets a job.
It's funny. I have to mention that Tessa's character, Detroit, in this looks more like a Marvel superhero than she did in Thor Ragnarok.
it's almost one of those things where it's like, oh, wait, that is her.
Her My wardrobe goodness. Was awesome. I just want to read all her t-shirts and her earrings.
This movie has so many gags and so many visuals, but I'm just going to get through this premise real quick. He gets a job in some sketchy kind of telemarketing firm and then basically sells
his You can just say telemarketing firm.
Yeah. So who wants to go here? Gentlemen.
I got to say that the right off the bat, the cast was amazing.
Yeah.
I love Lakeith Stanfield. David Cross as his white boy. Quote unquote,
yes. Yeah, the gimmick here is that he starts to rise as after an older character played by Dan fucking Glover, who really does look too old for this shit. So it's like, man, you're never going to sell anything unless you start talking in a white voice. And he's like, okay. And so he starts channeling that. And from the remainder of that point, whenever he's on the phone and in certain social situations, his voiceover is provided by David Cross, a very white person.
This is like the classic Eddie Murphy white people skit, just writ large. I mean, it takes that premise, that one joke, and then takes it in places you weren't expecting. And this is really hard for me to even summarize because I don't dare spoil anything. This movie has the most what the fuck, what direction did this movie just go moments I've seen in a film in a long time.
I really, so the thing that this immediately reminded me of was a handful actually of indie movies from the early to mid 80s, especially stuff by Alex Cox. Repo Man, got a lot of Repo Man vibe from this, a little bit of Straight from Hell, just in the sense that there is a lot of, it is, nominally a sci-fi movie, because this is taking place in a slightly more dystopian future, and granted, we don't have a long way to go, but a slightly more dystopian future than where we're living in now. But it presents elements that you know, we just kind of accept through, you know, magical or sci-fi reality, that there is a great big corporation that is basically having people sign lifetime contracts with them, where they
are indentured servants.
Yeah, they become indentured servants. They live at the factory. They work at the factory. They eat at the factory.
It's straight up voluntary slavery.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And, you know, one of the great things about this film, and Alex Cock is a good reference point, because this is a very Haydn film. If you've ever seen any of his movies, they take place in our world, but they're just tweaked enough that you know that you're dealing with a very specific vision of our world. And this film has that in spades, from the production design to some of the stranger concepts, for never more obvious than this. So what is the name? Does anybody remember the name of the company?
Worry Free.
Which is like preying on everybody's economic insecurity. Like, you know what? You're broke. You can't make it. Just come into the factory.
Give up.
Whole family.
Just give up.
View as a telemarketing.
Yeah. Company. You know, and one of the things that the Lucky Stanfield character finds out, that he's been promised that if he can really prove himself in sales, he can work his way up the ladder. He literally goes up a golden elevator to this magical place where suddenly you're a power seller. And you get
power
to see
caller.
Or the power caller. Thank you. And you get to see the full scope of what this company actually does.
The best quote comes from Danny Glover, because at some point he's kind of alluding to the fact that stuff on the upper floors is a lot dicier than just the you know, because the regular telemarketing stuff is, they're selling encyclopedias more or less.
Yeah.
But in the upper floors, it's a lot sketchier, and Danny Glover basically looks at him after Lakeith is like, Cash is like, well, basically it's apples and oranges in that case. So he's like, no, this is more like apples and Holocaust.
Yeah. It's a subtle movie. This is not. There may be a few moments where some of the gags maybe get hit on the head too many times. There's some moments where I felt it kind of dragged. But these are very minor complaints. This is a shotgun approach to comedy, and I don't think Riley always hits the target, but he usually does. It's frequent. And when he does hit that target, this is lethal satire. I mean, this is full of righteous fury.
Part of why it excels is because, it starts off, and you don't realize it's an alternate present day. It starts off relatively normal, and it's just sort of scaling up and up and up, and it's a roller coaster. It's constantly going up, and you know, till it finally turns the knob up to 15.
Yeah,
and then you're like, "What now just happened?"
Yeah, and that's where we like.
Talking about magical surrealism or realism, like you were saying, you see, it starts off like you're in every world, like in the everyday world, and it just takes it somewhere else. But talk about like putting your society up to a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, if somebody were to look into the future and see the current state of affairs, they would probably be like, what the hell? I just saw this person on TV.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, leading the free world. And what we're seeing on the TV in the movie is some crazy shit. Right? And you just wonder, like, what's going to happen in the future? What else? You know, he just put up a magnifying glass to our society, and I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, with one exception, and you'll figure out what that exception is really quick once you see the movie. Everything in here is something that you kind of look at and you're like, well, yeah, that seems off kilter, but I could see it. Yeah. I could see that happening.
I wouldn't even rule out the weird thing nowadays.
It's crazy it sounds. I mean, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, a lot of movies, you're like, I wonder if they're going to go there. Are they going to go there? This movie goes there, but you're like, wow, I didn't even know this was on the map. I didn't know. I mean, we were going to turn left, right. No, you just went through a wormhole and just shot me into some totally weird dimension where bizarre things happen.
And I think it works because he has has assembled an incredible cast here. They're all of the characters are very well grounded. They're people that you know. They're people that you can relate to, and they anchor this, because even though this starts on a very even keel of guy doing his best to try to make something of himself, it just rockets to the stratosphere very quickly, much like his meteoric career, and shit gets fucking weird.
Yes, very weird, very fast. And the thing about Lakeith Stanfield in this is that he's got this challenging role of he has to make you like Cash. I mean, the man's nickname is Cash, and he's desperate for it. And you have to realize, okay, here's a guy who is little by little gonna go and stick to this script that he's been provided. He's gonna do this shitty job, even if it kind of hurts his soul. He's gonna make it happen. But at some point, you realize that he's made a deal with the devil, and he's complicit in this, even while his friends, his co-workers, who are all trying to strike, his girlfriend, who's like an artist and a sort of part of some Banksy-like protest collective, his friend, who also works at the telemarketing firm, has joined another guy whose job is clearly to go into factories and places and foment revolution and start strikes, played by Steven Yeun.
Yeun,
I'm sorry. I'm trying to read that. Can't read it. But, God, there are so many things I want to say. How could we talk about this movie without ruining it for people?
Well, just going with the cast bit again, the almost everybody in here is a person of color. White people are very thin on the ground, with the exception of the aforementioned devil that the deal is made with, which is played by Armie Hammer, who is fucking having a blast in this movie. He is just so over the top in his like crazy coke fueled debauchery and just complete cluelessness as to the fact that he's an like Thanos level evil.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at some of these. Don't go to Wikipedia, because I think there's a couple. I see a couple spoilers right here in the Wikipedia page. So see the movie first. But there are voices provided by people I didn't even catch. Like Forrest Whitaker has a voice mm-hmm. in this. Yeah. Steve Buscemi I recognize.
Yeah, all of the white voices are played.
I actually only recognize Patton Oswalt.
I nailed Patton Oswalt and Steve Buscemi, but I did not get Lily James.
Yeah. So, oh my goodness, look at that. Tom Woodruff Jr. is in this. Well, I'll be darned. This movie is definitely going to be on my list, I think, of best films of the year. It's early yet, I know, but if you think about the summer when we typically have, you know, the studio tent poles, we have the sequels.
We have less of 2018 than we have more of it.
Yeah, but this summer, it seems to me, this summer and the months leading up to it have been particularly strong for these little gems. I mean, in one 3-month period, we've gotten A Quiet Place, Hereditary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, Upgrade, and stuff like this. Look, kids, go out and see Avengers. Go out and see Solo. Go out and see whatever big tent poles out there right now. See whatever silly comedy comes your way. But I recommend watching this film opening weekend if you can, if it's playing anywhere near you. One, you'll avoid spoilers that way. And two, you'll actually be sending a message to people saying, hey, we support these kind of movies.
I will say, as much as I love Tag, which is one of the like premier comedies that's out right now, I laughed more at this.
It really is
a shotgun blast, with the exception that most of the pellets are hitting.
Yeah.
I was gut laughing. And a lot of it, you know, is granted, it's social commentary-based humor, so well within my wheelhouse. But, the gut laughs were big in this.
And when it wants you to feel uncomfortable, it makes you feel uncomfortable in ways that you're laughing and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm laughing along with this because this is horrific. Let's go around the room. Sir, what do you want to say about this film, man?
Are this final thoughts or just...
I'm talking too much. Yeah. I want to hear you guys talk because you're quiet.
I really like the surreal aspect of this and the way it goes. And a lot of stuff like on television is kind of it's a little similar to like, say, RoboCop. And
yeah.
The way it padded out its world by showing you like what's going on in popular culture at the time. And I think, you know, it kind of has... It would fit in there to a certain extent.
It is that Verhoeven excess of, like, here's this world, and it can get that batshit crazy.
And there's a lot of levels of metaphor here that I'm curious Because there's certain things about, like, you can find, like, Black Lives Matter, and why aren't people getting more involved? And, like, they literally say that, like, calling your congresspeople doesn't do anything. You can actually...
I thought he was talking right to me. I'm like, holy shit.
Don't call a phone number. You have to actually do something.
Right. Or the choice is just going, well, now we know what's going on, and now we just choose to accept it.
Well, I'm sorry, just like, you know, Lakeith Stanfield is not the only thing this has in common with Get Out. It really does, you know, play with these deep-seated fears that we have, especially, I think, a great many people in this country right now of, what the fuck do I do about this?
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, the time for subtlety is over. Like, you need this fucking shotgun blast.
Yeah. But his name is literally Cash is Green.
Yeah.
Like, do we continue to go along with the way society is heading? Cash is Green. Or do we actually do something to change it?
And it doesn't, like any good satire, I don't think it provides a lot of easy answers.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I think it shoots down every target that it aims at. Like I said, sometimes I think a few gags take too long or don't pan out, but when you're just blasting everything in sight, you know, you're not going to hit everything. But man, when he does, it's a really solid hit. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the first shot of this movie and the last shot of this movie, you would think you're watching two completely different movies. And I love that. It's great. I'm really, really happy. And it's just an example of what happens when you give somebody a chance. This is a first-time director. Mm-hmm. He's a first-time African-American director. And, you know, he fucking hit it out the park, and I loved it.
Oh, man. JC?
What was his final thoughts with arbitrary?
No, let's just keep chatting. No. Keep chatting. Okay. We'll go around the room once before we hit the final thoughts. We're still good on time.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so often we... I'm one of the big supporters of, like, the summer movie season, the tempos and everything like that, but... To echo your point, it is really great to see these smaller movies just really knocking it out of the park. And so often we complain about how there aren't any original ideas in movies and there aren't anything. We've seen everything before. And this, I mean, this has things that you've never seen before. And this has ideas that you've never seen before. And it's overall theme you've seen before, but its execution is definitely unique and should not be missed.
I echo that sentiment. Mr. Paul?
It's really nice to be just so fully on board with this as an indie production. Like I said, it reminded me a lot of stuff that I saw kind of before indie theater became the, you know, more of the art house theater we get today, when stuff was a lot more punk rock. And this, like I said, that's just why, you know, Alex Cox, who directed Repo Man, and Sid and Nancy kind of leaps out because, you know, as people say, hip hop is the new punk. Well, this is kind of the first, you know, hip hop slash punk indie movie I've ever seen, and I fucking loved it.
It feels like a movie by somebody who's afraid he's never going to get to make it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which you got a lot more of in the 80s when people barely were able to get movies off the ground. Like, I'm going to swing for the fences.
I'm going to do everything I've ever wanted to do because I may never get another chance again. Who else is going to let me do this crazy kind of shit? I mean, I cannot believe. And now, I know Boots Riley, I did a little bit of reading up on the gentleman. I'm sure some of the people in our audience know him very well. I'm a little late to the game. The guy's been around for like 20 years. He's well-respected in the rap community.
Now,
I mean, he's also done stuff with Guys of Rage Against the Machine, but he's also been part of like the Occupy Oakland movement and various other political... political activism is his thing.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, Armie Hammer's character, his name's Stephen Lyft, and if you take like Apple, literally a couple moments where Apple's come into play... including one where he's tossed an apple. But, like, and his last name, Lyft, you know, Lyft is a famous startup. You know, like, Oakland has been in the shadow of San Francisco and Silicon Valley, and they've, they've basically stayed the same, except for now they're getting more gentrified.
Yeah.
Because they finally moved out of San Francisco and making their way to Oakland. And that prosperity hasn't trickled down to them. And I'm just curious, you know, how much of this, like, you know, is just trenchant commentary on Silicon Valley and those people.
I think a great deal. Yeah. And you know, so sadly, or not so sadly, depending on which percentage of the population you live in, that kind of relationship between San Francisco and Oakland is kind of a microcosm for how it's how America's going in a lot of its big cities.
It touches on that, but I think, and to kind of talk again about how small movies are making a big impact this year, this pairs really well with Blindspotting, which is also set in Oakland, and even more directly tackles the gentrification issue than this does.
But that's
and
not surrealism or anything.
It's not surrealism,
like
no. But
it's obviously...
Not quite, well, it is a little bit. It's not quite as surreal as this, but very, very few things are ever going to be quite as surreal.
But it's obviously an idea that's current now, that people are worried about or thinking about. And, you know, we're going to see more comedies, I think, about gentrification.
I guess Oakland's having a really great year because they also have Black Panther, Ryan Coogler.
There you go, you know. When did Black Panther come out? Not this year, like it already felt like it was last year. Yeah. But, I mean, like between this and Black Panther, I mean, that's a hell of a bookend. And then, you know, Get Out the year before with a lot of first-time filmmakers. Ryan Coogler's not a first-time filmmaker, but it's just this moment where we're really seeing these stories come to us on the big screen. And this is kind of on the smaller scale. This is where I expected these kind of stories to come out of, the smaller independent films. And it's great that some of them are actually getting some big mainstream success, or in the case of Black Panther, obviously, it's a huge, huge studio production. I don't know how much he made this movie for, but he certainly maximized his budget. It's a very fully realized world. How he got this amazing cast is beyond me. I mean, to get all of these people to sign on board for a first-time filmmaker is incredible. I mean, Tessa...
Probably read the script.
I think people read the script and just said, fuck it, I want to do this.
Yeah. You know? I don't know what's going on here, but I like it.
Yeah, this is different. I mean, Armie Hammer's kind of been in that same boat where he's a guy who like was going to be like this next big star. He got a couple of like franchise films.
He is my kind of dark horse guy lately because for the, I mean, literally, if you had gone to me a year ago and asked me my opinion of Armie Hammer, I'd be like, well, I'd rather watch a pool of dishwater because it's more interesting.
But he's fucking
amazing.
Yeah. Well, even when the movies in were bad, he was always interesting in them to me at least.
Yeah.
This tells me that directors just didn't really know how to handle them or get the most out of him. Or like
whether
really
or not you like Lone Ranger, Armie Hammer was not the reason Lone Ranger.
And what was the other one? He did that 60s remake of
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
That was the turning point where I was like, oh, you used to kind of annoy me, but now you're kind of fun.
But then he did like Landmine, which was a really lame, kind of boring little indie film, but it was a showcase just for his performance.
Yeah.
He's really just on a landmine by himself for like
Call Me By Your Name was
and
just
then Call
holy
Me By Your
shit.
Name. And then, you know, so I think he made the smart move is like, I'm not going to be that guy.
Right.
Top lines, a tent pole, but I can do these small, smarter films. And, you know, he's really shining in that regard.
Yeah, he's knocking it out.
And for perfect casting, Tessa Thompson, again, somebody who at this point I didn't think could even be acquired for film.
Her range. She really kind of came into my, you know, hove into my view with Westworld, and I was just like, I really dislike this actress because it took me Thor Ragnarok and a couple other things for me to realize, oh, I just don't like that character, and she's really good at playing her.
I mean, and she's also really good in Creed, and then she's also, she's just, and every character, she's kind of playing something completely different. I mean, Danny Glover, of course, is here as kind of the old sort of veteran character actor. You got Terry Crews in here. I mean, this is just solid, folks. And again, I am dancing around so much because if we had a spoiler section, we could really get into the nitty gritty. But I can tell it's getting time to wrap things up. So let's just go around the room and get into our final thoughts before we spoil anything else. So, George, what do you have to say? What are your final thoughts?
I loved it. It's excellent. It's brilliant. I think that everyone should go to see it, really. I mean, and there's just a lot to talk about once you've seen the movie. I mean, I think that we could continue on with this, like with spoiler and what we think it all means. And it's just a lot to think about and a lot to talk about. And I really appreciate that aspect of it. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
So overall, I would give it 9 out of 10 decorative plates featuring... Well, I'll just say decorative plates.
I have to say, I love this movie. It was great. From the set design to the wardrobe was on point. The lighting, I mean, say nothing of the acting. I think Lakeith Stanfield is having a hell of a couple years. He's on ATL as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love it. Well, I've seen first season of ATL. Absolutely love it.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
The show's called Atlanta. Yeah. Like,
well, when you're good friends with a show, you just use the nickname.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. I was talking about the T.I. movie. Was he not in ATL?
So something different. Okay.
I know. From now on, I'm just going to call my favorite movies My Boo.
Take it easy, white guy.
Hey, you didn't see this movie. Get out of this movie.
Sorry.
We're going to make you rap.
No, please don't.
No one wants that.
So, no.
Steven Yeun was amazing. And, like, yes, there's the surrealism or the part of it, but there's also some realistic shit that I've gone through. I was the guy saying, you know, $3 on pump 5. You know, I was the guy who literally had the windshield wipers, had to do it manually. I had to do that shit. I had a crappy ass telemarketing job. Like, this is me. Obviously, he looks a lot cooler doing it. But, you know, I absolutely love this film. I'm going to give it, I have to give it 10 out of 10. Amazing Tessa Thompson.
All right.
Can Excellent. I say one thing?
Oh, yeah, George.
Because the character, he goes through this a little bit aimless and kind of depressed. A lot of times when movies feature a character like that, they tend to get a little aimless and they tend to get a little depressing. And this really strikes a balance to where you feel that, but it doesn't let it linger too long to where the movie drags, in my opinion. It keeps it coming with the humor, and I really appreciated that. And I felt like a lot of directors wouldn't have been able to handle that as well. So.
Absolutely. I
feel like
with
the 90s brought us Office Space, and 2010s or whatever brought us this.
Yeah, not bad.
This is definitely something people should see if they're longing for something they've never seen before, for they want something different from the tentpole blockbusters. Every performance here is nailed. Even the voice performances are all they're all fantastic. And what's funny about this is I from the trailer I expected a really great movie because the trailer was cut really well. And the trailer does one of those great things where it sells you a completely different movie than what it delivers, but it does it in a good way. It doesn't under deliver. It way over promises, but it also way over delivers. I would give it 8 out of 10 lines of cocaine. Maybe it's cocaine.
Maybe cocaine. Bo, Mr. Questionable Cocaine himself.
This movie made me really, really happy and also a little bit sad because it's so reflective of a lot of things that are going on. But I think it's an incredibly great indie flick, and it's an incredibly great political movie. And it's unlike a lot of political movies that come out. It's not Trojan horsing anything. It's saying, no, look, we're literally being held hostage by end-stage capitalism. We need to fucking do something. And, you know, maybe just voting or you know, having a protest on your phone isn't good enough. Right. It's going to take something a little bit more than that. I'm just incredibly intrigued with Bruce Riley as a director. Really looking forward to what he's going to do in the future. Perfectly assembled cast. The movie needs an Oscar, if for nothing else, the ADR. The voice of dubbing that people had to do in this movie was fucking incredible, and boy, they pulled it off incredibly. Standout cast, and literally probably the funniest movie I've seen this year. easily going to give this, I'm going to go ahead and hype it, give it a full 10 out of 10. Oh. Happy ponies.
Oh, my. Okay. I don't think I've ever seen you give 10 out of 10 anything. That's some strong words from Mr. Bhopal. I'm kind of leaning in the same general direction as you guys.
NPR host thing.
I hate to use the word classic or new, because that shit gets so overused. But I think, 10, 15, 20 years, are we going to be talking about this film like we would about Repo Man or Putney Swope or any kind of like political, Do the Right Thing, any sort of politically tinged satire that stands the test of time? I kind of suspect we will if we're not all living in slave camps by then.
I can see Criterion snatching this one out.
Oh, they better. God damn it, they better, because I'll buy a copy of that. I can't wait to see the packaging, because if they package it the way this movie looks, it's just this great candy-colored... By the way, we should just... Boots Riley, we're talking about this as being this really fresh, original thing, but there's also a lot of things we can compare it to. And he's one of those guys who I don't think is ashamed about
his... He may be big in political activism, and he may be big in hip-hop, but he obviously loves the fuck out of movies.
Absolutely.
Because there are so many call-outs to so many... I mean, who the fuck puts makes a hip-hop movie meditating on end-stage capitalism and puts a Michelle fucking Gondry reference in
right.
it?
Right. I mean, Michelle Gondry, I was going to dance around that. No, you guys are ruining the joke. I was going to say he kind of gets a shout-out, but I wasn't going to ruin that joke for you. It's a kind of shout-out. It's not exactly a perfectly spelled name drop. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, music by Tune Yards, by, Boots Riley's own group, The Coop. Rosario Dawson has a voice in that.
Atlanta.
What?
It's pronounced Atlanta.
Atlanta. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
I believe that's a Little Deuce Atlanta.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, the music credits, like almost every song he helped write.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the music across this board. This is a labor of love. This guy is all over this movie. I mean, everything feels like it has been filtered through a very particular vision. There's no pussyfooting around here. I mean, this is like... This is how my style. This is the way I make films, and here it is.
Hopefully, a future auteur.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the future. Like I said earlier, I think it sometimes goes a little bit too long, even though it's only about 105 minutes. But there's so many jokes flying at you. I sometimes wanted a slightly tighter cut, but nevertheless, he hits more often than he misses, and he almost never misses. I give this 9.5 out of 10 tardigrades. Thank you very much for listening. Go see this movie.